position number 12892, reel 2.
Squadron leader Drobinsky, reel 2.
The conductor gave us to understand that if we give him a little bit of help, that is financial help, he'll take care of us. So we all together got few lays that we had, and he locked us in the first class compartment. And we had uninterrupted trip all the way to Bucharest. Before Bucharest, the train started slowing down. The same conductor came open the door and let us understand that it's not very wise to get to the station, to the platform, because the Gestapo might be there. So if we can jump off the train when it's at slowest speed and go through the suburbs. Well, which, of course, we took his advice and we jumped off the train and went through the fields to the outskirts of Bucharest. We called the first taxi that we saw, and imagine that was American Buick. We asked them to take us to the Polish consulate, and he took us there. And the Polish consulate, of course, they were expecting, they were notified about things that might happen. They took us there and they gave us, I remember, $5 each, and took photographs of us and told them to go and stay in the hotel, which was already taken for people like us. In other words, the hoteliers were cooperating. And so we got a bus, first time wash in the hotel. And the following day, we went back to the consulate. We got tickets and another $5. And we went on the train, taken to the station. To the train, and ticket this time was made from Bucharest to Belgrade, which was in Yugoslavia. In Yugoslavia was the same procedure. We went to the consulate and stayed overnight in the hotel. And the following day we got tickets from Belgrade to Modena, which is on the French-Italian border. And we had to go through Yugoslavia, Trieste, right across to the French border in Modena. Well, we arrived in Modena on the train that we were traveling. They were full, practically the train was full of Alpine troops. They were going toward the French-Italian border. We couldn't understand Italian, but the only thing we could understand, they were singing song against England and against France. That we understood. But we, three of us, and there were a few more people who came on the same train going through Hungary, called the same, somehow the same train, but we didn't see them. In our compartment, in our not compartment, the carriage in our carriage, there were only three civilians, and that was us. We were three civilians, and the rest were Alpine troops, a little drunk, some were less or more, and they were singing, and we were trembling that somehow we might get caught or whatever. And then they came from the last stop, which was in Turin, Milan, I think. I can't remember if it was Milan or Turin. I think it's Milan. Nearest, the last stop nearest French border. And that's when he got on the train to join us. We were going through all, through Trieste, through all of the Italy, northern Italy. When we came to Modena, and train stopped, and there is guard comes in. They couldn't go any further because the difference in the width of the rails, rail lines. So I think that's what it was. Anyhow, they didn't go. They stopped there. And the guard, station guard, came to our conduct, to our carriage, and showed that, you know, we have to follow him. Well, we came out, of course, and followed him to the station. And he took us to a room, told us to sit down, there were benches, wooden benches, sit down, and said, in France, I'll be back. And he went, locked us in. Now we are three of us sitting there by ourselves. I have a dagger, which you can see here, in my baggage, in my luggage, a lot of photographs from the Air Force. I had a revolver which luckily I disposed of going through the over the river because I was afraid, but this I rested because that's very nice things to have. And here we're sitting, three of us there. And if he comes, we have a passport as students. What am I doing with the dagger? And what I am doing with photographs and uniforms? An hour passed, and then nearly another hour passed, the door opened, and he came in and beckoned us to follow him. We went, and he took us to the station, to the train, and he said in French, "I know vous êtes aviateur polonais, you are Polish German, bonne chance, good luck." You know that we nearly cried, and we went on that train moved. Then we went to the other side, and train stopped in Modena on the French side, and of course there were ladies with teas, coffees, and canapes, and all the rest of it. It was quite a different environment altogether. We were very lucky to make that journey.
Which from month would this have been?
That was October.
October
1939. Because I have here a ticket which says that to on to Bucharest on the 5th of October 1939, and the next one was Putnik, 6th of October 39. So the same day, on the 6th, we were from Postunia to Modena through via Trieste, Milano, Torino, via Trieste, Venice, Milano and Torino. Torino was the last where the Alpine troops came in. I'm sorry, my geography wasn't up to scratch. In Torino, but that's on the 6th of October 1939. So he arrived in Modena. Then, of course, we coaches would train. We went to Le Bourget, near Paris. That was French Air Force station, or made for us as a living quarter. And within a few days there were about 400 of us were there on the station. Then
so did you join the French Air Force there?
No, I wanted to. Some joined French Air Force, some got orders to join the French units in the French Air Force. Lyon was the main point of the Polish Air Force there, and those who left in France went to Lyon, and from there went to different units. But the rest was waiting and going to England to be trained as bomber pilots. Of course, I was absolutely devastated because I want to be a fighter pilot, train as a fighter pilot, and I have to go and learn to fly bombers. The agreement between Poland and England and France was that some pilots in France will be stationed and trained as a fighter pilot. But the rest, apart from technical, of course, staff, which is, doesn't matter where they have to do the job, and looking after engines and airplanes. But the other part of pilots will go to England and train as bomber pilots and will join the bomber squadrons. We were really disappointed. But, nolens volens, you have to do what you're told. And on 27th of January, a group of us left Cherbourg and arrived to Southampton. So from Southampton, by coaches, we went to RAF station Eastchurch in Isle of Sheppey, and that was our point there. So Tenan was, sort of made a Polish station for every Polish airman was going there. Another place was Blackpool later on, but for the beginning, flying personnel especially was in this church. And we stayed there, marching up and down. We were eager to start flying. because we taught them, you know, Germans are very not only cruel, but very strong, and we have to get ready as soon as possible. Said, oh yes, oh yes, and we learn English, we learn marching up and down the airfield. We went once for an hour, everybody went to Link Trainer. You know, Link Trainer, it's the sort of
simulator,
flying simulator. And so we were just getting very upset. One day I remember the hurricane came and landed. We wanted to see it because we haven't seen British aeroplane. We want to see it, but we were stopped. We were not allowed to go and see it. Well, that upset us a bit. But we stayed on the airfield and got into the airmen's quarters. They were empty then around the area, around the airfield, around the Eastridge, apart from the mess. There were some, I had to rearrange, as I say, if I can say, rearrange the station, because so many Poles started arriving, there was no room for them. So some of them lived in airmen's quarters, airmen houses. What happened to the airmen, I don't know, but probably they were moved somewhere else. We stayed there, and then we went to Blackpool to join the rest of it, and I kept asking, when are we going to fly? Oh, there's plenty of time. Where are we going to fly? Oh, there's plenty of time yet. Don't worry, you'll fly. France collapsed, and all of a sudden, then the groups were, pilots were going on conversion course to different places. And I went to Old Sarum near Salisbury. A group of five of us, and Tiger Moss and Hector, we flew there, and then we went to Harden, RAF station Harden, and then we had a ferry battle. And to start us on ferry battle, which had a retractable undercarriage before we went on the hurricane, the head office, headquarters from at Harden, got the Polish instructor who was our instructor in Poland in the cadets school, and he came sooner than we did, so he joined the English squadron. He was already flying, but because of language difficulties, they thought the best to have a Pole who would instruct the newcomers. So they asked this chap, Captain Chlopik, and he came and gave us three takeoff and three landings on ferry battles, and then we went on hurricane. We flew on hurricanes for a while, and if if I may, look at the record in here.
You've got your logbook there. Then you got posted to your first squadron.
Yes. Well, we got posting after we finished a number of hours from Hurricane, to be exactly 18 hours. But we got posting to a Spitfire squadron, all three of us. I got posting to 65 squadron, and two friends of mine received posting to 54 squadron. And we haven't even seen the Spitfire. So we went to the mess and saw the senior officer there, who was in charge of training, and asked him that we got a posting to Spitfire squadron, but we haven't seen one. So he said, okay, put him in his car, and went. The squadron, Spitfire squadron training was on the other side of the airfield. So he took us there, show us quickly what's what, not much different, except in different places and not there. So it was smaller, cabin and everything else. And we took each of us three taking off and three landings. And then he took us in his car and we missed the lunch and to the station. And we arrived at Constance. So that was our introduction to the Spitfire Squadron.
So you arrived at Hornchurch on the 12th of August in the middle of the Battle of Britain?
Yes. And at Hornchurch there were 65 squadron, 54 and 74 squadron. And we were attached to squadrons but haven't flown yet. So there was a station flight under pilot officer Cousins. So we had to go to him first and fly Spitfire. So we went on training with him. First he took us on the Miles Master and then on the Spitfire. After, you know, ordinary three landings, and taking off and landings. Then on 24th of August, I went to a sector echo. I was told to fly anywhere high, get acquainted with the terrain, with Thames and all the rest of it in London, and get some point of reconnaissance. Of recognizing some point in case of you get lost, but you see the points where there are some special point that you know will find yourself, because when you're very high you lose the airfield, and especially if weather's not good and clouds come over, in the meantime while you're flying you might get lost, which is not very nice in the best of times. Well, I went there. Now, when got more or less acquainted with the terrain around there, after about an hour's flying, I started going back to Hornchurch. And suddenly, in front of me, I saw an explosion on the ground, and I looked up and there were the bunch formation of German bombers dropping bombs. They were in about 14,000 feet. I was about 5,000 feet by that time when I decided to go to the base. So I started chasing them with my full throttle and started chasing them. Slowly and slowly I was getting up closer to them, but we both were in the same direction, so it was taking a little bit longer, much longer than I hoped.
Were they bombing the airfield?
Yes, they were bombing in the airfield. And eventually I came more or less close to... I thought they were close, but they were still about maybe 1,000 feet away, behind, and about maybe 400 or 500 feet below them. But I was ready to get even closer, because there's no use wasting ammunition. But then I took a look at my instruments, and I was getting out of petrol, because I flew for about an hour on the reconnaissance flight. Then I took a full throttle to catch up with the formation of German bombers, and I'm practically on a zero. I said, God, I can't get them. So I decided to give a shot, press the button, and whatever it was, if I hit or not, it makes no difference, providing if I'm not too slow on speed, so I will not get into a spin. And I had to stop and come down, and came down to the airfield, and coming down to 2,000 feet, I see that there are a hell of a lot of craters in there. And I have no petrol to go around, make a proper around first. So I had to land straight on. I decided to do just that. But I landed between the craters, and when I touched the ground and got on 3 points of landing, I undid my seat, my belts, and I stood up to see which way to go, like a slalom, because there were craters were everywhere. You see, the Spitfire was a little bit different to Hurricane. The Hurricane, you can see it over, practically, but on Spitfire, you had to do it sideways. But I managed to do it, and I came back to the dispersal point on the airfield, on the station flight. The mechanics came around, and the propeller stopped. The mechanics came down and said, are you all right? I said, yes. So you had very good luck. Well, there was about, you know, half a liter of petrol left.
Had you had any bullets in the...